This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp with 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, coming to you with another important update from the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Following is a report from Thomas H. Joseph II, a community organizer at PICO National Network, People Improving Communities Through Organizing, out of California. In the report, he shows on video the demonstration of prayer and march that was met by militarized police, helicopters that he says were dropping tear gas from the sky, and militarized vehicles that blocked the road and blocked people from leaving the area. The video was posted around 3 p.m. Let's listen.
Okay, the cops got big militarized vehicles jamming the road. I don't know if anybody's seeing this. They're blocking signal too on Facebook. We're surrounded by cops. They're pulling in behind us.
They have their guns out.
They have their weapons out. They have big militarized roads. Everybody share this on Facebook. They blocked the road with a militarized vehicle. We're telling them to drive out through the field and wrap around them. See that eagle's over in the field telling us to go that way. There's cops all behind us as well. Share this live on Facebook. They already dropped tear gas. Oh, they're pulling in beside us now. They're going to stop us from going through the field, too. They're moving in. Share this far and wide. They already dropped tear gas with the airplane duster.
Go through the field!
They dropped tear gas or mustard gas with the aircrop duster. They won't let us leave. They got us locked in on both sides. I'm live streaming. If they're starting to arrest people yet or not, but they're moving in close and they got their weapons drawn. They're searching that first back vehicle.
What'd they grab?
Share this. They're blocking us on media. They froze up my Facebook. They got a sniper up on top of the hail bale over there. Riot gear, weapons
drawn. They feel
strong
with them guns.
Oh, they're rushing. We got our first arrest. So they arrested the lady that brought us down here. People are getting mouthy. They got... Whoa, he's got a gun drawn. He's pointing it at people.
We have no weapons.
They just put the bullets in the gun. We have no weapons. We are unarmed. They said that the road's open, but it's not. They still have it blocked.
We'll go home.
They're arresting everybody now. Everybody's running. Share this far and wide. We're gonna get shot out here.
You stay where you're at. Do not go towards police officers. If you want to be arrested.
Let us leave!
They pulled out a big old shotgun on those horses.
No, they got all the shotguns are loaded. Bullets are in the chamber, machine guns.
Ask them, get their badge number.
Here comes the armor tank. Facebook is blocking this, but share it. One guy is about ready to blast on us.
Watch your ears though, they got their stupid camera.
They got their sound weapon out here. We come out here to pray!
Let's go!
Use of tear gas and deadly weapons on prayerful, peaceful gatherers.
Hey, do you got room?
Hop in.
We gotta tell the story. We gotta tell the world. That's why we gotta get out of here. All right, that's why we gotta go. Honk your horn, we gotta keep moving. Keep moving!
Okay, so use of deadly weapons, no guns were fired, but they locked and loaded them. They dropped mustard gas or tear gas overhead with a plane. I don't know exactly what it was. The wind blew it out of there, the bad aim on their part. Our creator sent a bunch of wind. They came in with force though. Signing off and trying to get out of here as soon as I can.
Hello, this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp with 88.1 KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. And I have three very special callers on the line that are joining us for today's program. First, we have Rania Hoblett, who's an enrolled member of the Oglala Lakota tribe. She resides in Mandan, North Dakota, and is the acting director of the Native American Institute. Also with us today, we have Stephanie Dakota, who's an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa and an intern with the Native American Training Institute. She's also currently working on her master's in social work through UND. And finally, but very importantly, we have Karen Von Fossen, who is a minister of the Bismarck Unitarian Universalist Church and Fellowship and a humanities scholar with the Native American Training Institute. Welcome to today's show, and thank you for being here. I wanted to start today with Rania, and if you would please introduce yourself and tell us about the Native American Institute, please.
Good morning. My name's Rania Hoblett, and I am the acting director, and the Native American Training Institute is an organization, a nonprofit, that works with the state of North Dakota in providing information to people who are foster parents of Native American children and actually people who provide care for foster children. And we work to keep everyone up to date on ICWA rules and regulations, and with the new changes, of course, we're working on updating everybody with that. And we provide workshops, I guess, that talk about the cultural aspect of being Native American and how to provide for the children. And always the point of our workshops or anything that we do is the well-being of the children. We also go out of state with this with our workshops and go to other tribes in the United States and also in Canada. Our Canadians come to us, quite honestly, at some point. So
okay. Stephanie, how about you chime in here? Tell me what you're doing with the Institute and why this work is important.
My name is Stephanie Dakota, and I am
an internship. I'm doing an internship with the Native American Training Institute. I'm currently working, as you said, on my master's degree in social work. And I chose NATI, Native American Training Institute, for my internship because I wanted to have an impact on a broader level in Indian country, and I wanted to work on a broad level in Indian country, a macro level. And so I wanted to use my skills in that way, and I'm really new with the Native American Training Institute, and so I'm still really learning about all the different things that are possible and that they do already. And so I have my hands in a lot of different things while I'm here. I'll be working on some curriculum development. I'm working on learning more about the trainings that they do have already. And the project that we'll be talking about today, I think, is something really new to me. So it's exciting. And like I said, there's just so many different aspects that NATI kind of has their hands in, and it's really exciting for me.
So I understand that you ladies were down at Standing Rock. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Karen, tell me, you were the one that initiated the conversation about doing another interview, because I've seen that you've been down at the camp and you've been trying to be involved in supporting what's happening at Cannonball. So tell me what this recent project is about and your latest visit with these ladies to the camp.
Well, great. And thanks again for having us, Cindy. Mm-hmm. It's really an honor. The project that we're working on, actually the three of us are collaborating on a number of things, so we're going to try to just concentrate on this one. And we made that pact before we got started. And this project is funded by the North Dakota Humanities Council and the Native American Training Institute. And the focus of the project is to invite people at the camp, particularly Native people at the camps, to share what is changing for them, what's changing in their lives as a result of being a part of life at the camps.
Mm-hmm.
From our perspective, visiting there, often frequently volunteering and spending time and taking supplies, my sense is that there's a real cultural transformation of many kinds that's happening there. And I think you and I, Cindy, last time we talked, shared a sense of receiving more than we could possibly give when we go.
Mm-hmm.
And in that spirit, as the three of us were talking about the effects on us of being there, we felt moved to invite others to share those stories, both so we can get those out now and so that future generations can hear those stories of those who did this work on their behalf back in 2016.
Wow, this is very exciting. I like it very much. And also, thank you for doing it, because the sense that I've gotten from going out to camp, and we'll be back there this weekend again, it's incredible to document what people are experiencing, how it is transforming their lives in many senses.
Yes.
And I think that is an incredibly important part of this story, because it is a sacred place. It is a sacred place, and it's having an incredible effect on every soul that goes there. Rania, could you speak a little bit about some of the stories that you've heard, maybe a specific one that you think is really important to share, or a couple of them?
Well, I will tell you about my son, who he didn't get involved right away, but then when he did, he was in. He called me and said, I'm there. I'm on it. Mm-hmm. And then he shared widely with his friends, and in particular with some of his friends from the military.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did so, one of them, well, they all had questions for him, you know, and he was happy to tell them about what was going on down there. But one in particular, one of his friends, who he described as conservative, ultra conservative, maybe even, but when he heard the story about the camp, got is in a group of people who are medics, and they came up. They gathered a bunch of people. He came from his JP's friend came from Texas,
mm-hmm.
and they set up a freshwater station, and they are working with the people in the medic tent at the camp, and providing personnel for that. And JP's friend will be back. He had, you know, as a lot of people had to go back home and earn some more money, so right. he could come back. He didn't lose his job.
Right.
And quite honestly, what that did, one of the things that did was that in the process, even though these two had been friends for years and served in the military together, had never asked or talked to JP about his heritage, his Lakota heritage, or, you know, what it meant to him, or how he felt about it.
Wow.
Which might be okay, because at this point, my son JP is really finding his sense of pride and a sense of purpose with this camp, and he's very proud of his own participation, and he is happy to have other people that he knows participate, and probably in 100 years wouldn't have thought that this friend of his would ever even consider coming up. And so that there's that, and then my son and I also took his daughter to the camp one day, because, well, it was important for me to do it, and I also think for him to have her at the camp, so that as this progresses and as she gets older and understands more of what is going on or what is happening, she can always say that she was there. I hope to take her back again, but I am happy that she did get to go, and I think that's a sense with a lot of people I've spoken to about having their children there at the camp,
mm-hmm.
that, or taking them and making sure that they experience the feeling of the camp and being safe.
Mm-hmm.
They're feeling like their children are safe and are protected. And again, it's the children. I mean, a lot of us, I think, are doing it for not so much for ourselves as for our children, our grandchildren, and for our heirs that we may never meet. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I have spoken to other people who have gone down there who are, we're all overwhelmed by it, overwhelmed in a good way.
Yeah.
To see that many people and the immensity of it. I honestly don't think that the first time I went to the first camp and we couldn't find the tent that was there, we had to go around the hill to find it, ever in the world thought that it would be that big, that there would be that kind of cooperation,
mm-hmm.
with people. I have friends who've come from Montana and South Dakota and Texas now, and who are, they want to come back. Mm-hmm. Anybody who comes there, for the most part, wants to come back.
Yep.
They don't want to leave.
yes, I agree with this 100%. It was something that drew me, and being an Indigenous person myself, and my husband is a white man, and I know that he had a lot of concerns about what was being said about what was happening at the camp. Mm-hmm. But I told him, I need to take my children there. And I hear you saying that. I hear you talking about wanting your children to be there. Now, a lot of people have talked about the children that are there, the families that are there, the aunties that are there, the grandmothers that are there. There's many elders, there's many children, babies that are there, families together there. And folks that don't understand what's happening at the camp have criticized this. They've said, why would you take children to this camp? Can you speak a little bit about that, Stephanie?
Sure. I think almost why wouldn't you? Is maybe there's really no simple answer, but really it's such that you're talking about all the grandmas and the aunties that are there, and it's such a people are drawn. I was drawn to it as soon as I found out about it. I had to wait weeks to get there, which mm-hmm. was really hard for me.
Yeah.
And I brought my children there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a unique and healing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And as communities, we wrap our arms around our children.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our job, I think, to make them feel safe and to teach them. And this is such an awesome opportunity to have so many resources in the way of family and humanity and health and at the fingertips, mm-hmm. at our fingertips for our children, and for them to see this is what can be as a Native person.
Mm-hmm.
This is our voice is so powerful right now. And I keep saying that, but that's how I feel about it. It's such an opportunity as Native people to have a voice and to come together from different tribes and to have one voice and say, you know, this is what's important to us. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really a good opportunity for us to show our children, you are important. This is for you.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we do for you. And, to have all those grandmas and grandpas and elders there and all that culture that they carry with them in one place is such an opportunity to learn and to continue who we are as Native people. And for me, myself, I'm not, I guess I'm not 100% in the traditional way because I didn't learn that growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, wow, I get to see that and experience it and learn from it and be a part of it and connect more with who I really am and where, you know, what my history, where I come from.
Yes, definitely. Well, Karen, I'm going to turn now to you, and I want to ask you about this transformative experience and what are some of the stories you have collected? And of course, feel free to respond to the same questions that I've given to Rania and Stephanie about children and families being together at the Sacred Stone Camp.
Great, thank you. I was hoping I'd get a chance to respond. So I, early on, you know, a few months ago, I took my foster daughter to the camps and you know, I told her that I wanted to do that for two really clear reasons. Her heritage is German from Russia,
mm-hmm.
By the way. And the two reasons were I wanted her to have an opportunity to experience the healing of that place and that way of living
mm-hmm.
and that community, to sort of have that in her body. As a memory, as a place that she's been, an experience that she's had. And the second reason was I said, you're going to hear things that are not going to be true about what's going on here. And I would like you to have an opportunity to experience what is here for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's already happened. And she's in a position to be able to understand the difference between what is said and what is experienced. You know, what is said and what is real. And sometimes what is said is also real, and sometimes it's not. And that has everything to do with why we want to give people a chance to say what is real for them about the camps, and so that their voices are magnified. That voice, that collective voice is mm-hmm. magnified. One of the stories that stands out to me was shared by Candy Mossett with the Indigenous Environmental Network.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes from the Mandan Hidatsa Arikara Nation. And she said that 200 years ago, her ancestors put medicine in that place where the camp is in prophetic anticipation of this time, a time like this.
Wow.
And so that healing medicine would be there for those of us who arrive. And as soon as we ended Candy's interview, the three of us we just clustered together and said, that's so, I think we all were saying, yes, we feel that. I mean, that gives some history to the very palpable sense of healing that just seems to be in the place, not only in the people and what the people are making, which is healing and transformative already, in the whole context, in the whole everything. And I just feel so much gratitude to those people 200 years ago who did that for all of us.
Yes, and you know, and there is a continuum from our ancestors who told us about this time. As I've been interviewing people from different nations, everybody has talked about this time, mm-hmm. that it was something that we were told would happen, that the nations would come together, mm-hmm. the North and the South, and that the nations would come together from all corners of the world, you know, and that we would be in this place. The fact that that's happening is overjoying everyone. It's a sense of joy. Yes. To know, to recognize that this is happening right now, and to see these little children, mm-hmm. Leading, speaking, running, praying. Mm-hmm. It's children, mm-hmm. and it's the women. And these are the generations of children that are going to also defend the future of the next seven generations. Mm-hmm. Would you, Rania, I'm gonna keep going back in a circle here. Would you talk about the connections from the past to the future? What is it that the folks here are doing? I think it's really important that we talk about the detail, the depth of what is happening at the camp with the water defenders there, because it's not just about a pipeline. It's not just about some stretch of land, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's something much greater than that. Please talk about that.
It's the... You're right. It's as big as it gets, to be honest. The whole idea of the water and how that is one of the basic things that we need to survive.
Mm-hmm.
and is part of our makeup, our physical makeup, and it is the thing that, oh gosh, it's a foundation of who we are and what we are. It nurtures us. It nurtures the plants. It's a part of our weather. It defines itself in the rivers and in the oceans and shows us every day about what it does for us. Mm-hmm. It's living. It's moving. We just can't ignore it. We can't ignore that this is for everybody. It's not just, you're right, it's not just a small piece of land or one tribe or one family, anything. It's just huge. And it's a part, it has brought so many people together. Sadly, it's divided people, but I have to think that at some point, it will be clear that this was a fight for all the people in the world and on this earth and the ongoing part of the earth that we need to have. Mm-hmm. I also, if I might add, the other thing that is happening as far as I'm concerned is the, if you go back to tradition or how societies or how societies lived and how they functioned and all the traditions that were a part of that and who did what and who owned what and how that worked. And, you know, if you don't have some kind of organization, if you don't have some idea of what roles are belong to other people, or then years ago, you had to have that, and it was there, and it's what kept all those cultures, all those societies going, moving forward. And they all would go to the water at some point, you know, they had to. And now, with this confluence of people, of history, of beliefs, of traditions of all many tribes, what I think I see happening is that culture or society has to evolve to include what's happening in order for that culture or society to continue. Mm-hmm. That's what I see. So we see our children going and learning the things, maybe some seeing things being practiced that were practiced years and years ago. But at the same time, there's some forward movement in renewable energy, in actually maybe even going back to the old, like the medicines in the plants. Mm-hmm. And there are some things that are coming full circle, and there are some things that are being brought into the circle, mm-hmm. and being incorporated in a positive way.
Including food. Because
exactly, yes.
There's a return to traditional foods happening at the camp as well. Is that correct?
They are, yes. Yes. There are some of those things coming back or not coming back. And you know, there are things that have been practiced for years and years and years, but not, I don't believe in bulk.
Right.
Like this. Like, we're going to feed 7,000 people, or we're going to feed 1,000 people every day. That's right. My hometown that they're feeding three times a day.
Wow.
You know, that where I grew up was 1,000 people, and I just can't imagine it. And but they're depending on a lot on some of a lot of the traditional foods.
Mm-hmm. And they're building structures, mm-hmm. permanent structures. They're going to stay there for the winter. Tell me more. I'm going to pivot now over to Karen again. Tell me more about the project that you guys are working on. How are you documenting this work? And also, tell people where they can get a hold of you or Rania or Stephanie, if they want to know more about what you're working on and get involved.
Great. I just have to follow up on something Rania just said about feeding all those people. This is my one of my favorite. To me, this story just kind of conveys the enormity of the experience. One of the times that I was helping to serve a meal, so many people came. You know what I'm going to say? So I enjoy feeding people, and at seminary I worked in the cafe, and you know, feeding people is an honor to do. And but I have never emerged after just dishing out food to people with a blister.
Oh, wow.
Before, but there was, I mean, I handled that tool so long and so often that I literally got a blister on my thumb from just the sheer number of people to serve rice to.
Wow.
Yeah. That's just, that story is the kind I would have told my grandpa when he was living to try to convey the number of people who are here. But in terms of how we are gathering the footage and the audio, mm-hmm. We are regularly going to the camp, to mm-hmm. the camps, and we just had a pilot project where we set up a tent and we had garland on it, and we're rethinking whether we'll use the garland next time or not. We thought it would make us noticeable, and it certainly did. And we have flyers, and when we arrive, we take the flyers around to let people know where they can find us. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, we have, you know, we interviewed on Media Hill, so we went to people. Certainly, if somebody's not able to make the trip over to our garland-covered or not tent, we could make our way to them. Mm-hmm. People have the option of having video or audio or both. We just did the pilot, and hopefully we'll have support to do a bigger project. Mm-hmm. And then we'll make a somewhat regular schedule, and people will know where to find us. And we're hoping that word of mouth, and especially when it's kind of a cell-phone-free zone,
right?
That word of mouth is sort of an age-old communication system. And we're hoping after some people have some good experiences sharing their stories that you know, word will get out.
Well, you know, you guys are on the radio right now, so we could be reaching potentially a couple hundred thousand people right here in the Fargo-Moorhead metro area. That if they do go to Standing Rock, they can try to search for you or for Stephanie or Rania and share their stories with you.
Yes, absolutely.
So let me ask you guys one final question, and I'll let you guys share anything else that I haven't asked you about that you'd like for the public to know, for our listeners to know. I'm going to start with Stephanie this time. Tell me what has been the most important part of doing this work and being at the Sacred Stone Camp for you.
For me, I think the most important thing that has come out of this is because this is the first kind of event like this in my lifetime as a Native American individual, it's kind of given me a feeling of a renewed sense of, yes, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
We can't be ignored, and we have a voice, and it's really important. And we want to be part of this conversation. And we have always good intentions. And to me, I feel like we're, as a Native American community, we're we're revoicing that
mm-hmm.
in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what I've gotten out of this whole thing, a renewed sense of, you know, the strength that we have and the voice that we have and what we have to say. And I just wanted to add something. You didn't ask me, you asked Rania, but this is what happens at the camp too. When we interview people, we all have to have like a debriefing because everything anybody says is so profound and so,
mm-hmm.
I get it, I feel that way too, but they said it. And but you asked, you know, this is a bigger thing.
Right, right.
Just the water and the land. And really what it, to me, part of it is as human beings, this might be a time where we need to be humbled
mm-hmm.
as to our place in within nature and in the power that we have and don't have.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of barrel through. This is what we need as a society. This is what we want. This is the advancement. This. Without kind of, you know, and maybe it's time to really, truly stop and say, hey, we are only so powerful. There, water is more powerful than us.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to maybe refind our place and humble ourselves a little bit as human beings into what we can barrel through in life
mm-hmm.
and how much control we really do have or don't have.
God, that's so true. That's so very profound because I was literally just talking yesterday about the fact that Indigenous people consider water and plant life and animal life are relatives, like literally a part of us. Mm-hmm. And we consider ourselves to be a part of the great mystery of the great universe that surround us and that it is alive. And so we also understand that our ancestors knew that they needed to be connected and to be aware that they can't just take things from our Mother Earth without replenishing her, or from you know, when our ancestors would hunt, they would recognize that they needed to have prayers and offerings for the life that they're taking, and also make sure that they're constantly caring for the plant animal life around them. Those are things that we've, as a society, have gotten so far away from that it makes it difficult for people to understand the reverence and the prayer with which people are treating the Missouri River and the way in which Native people are approaching this entire protest, I guess, this entire stand at Standing Rock, which is, it starts with prayer. It starts with prayer. And so thank you for sharing that, Stephanie. I think that's such an important point. I'll let Rania go next. Tell us what has been the most, if not the most important thing. I hate to categorize things as being more important than others because there's so many things that are going on that are so important. But something that really stood out for you that you think folks really need to know.
Well, one of the things that I hope comes out of this is the project that we're doing, but the project that so many people, this is what I see. When I was at the University of Montana, I had a history teacher who, on a regular basis in our Native American Studies classes, would say to us, the victors write the history books.
Mm-hmm.
What I see coming out of this is the Native American population being able to write their own story in their own words, and to have it be more than a paragraph in a history book.
Mm-hmm.
And to have it be from their perspective and their own truth about it. And I find that to be so exciting, I can hardly stand it. I can't wait to start reading the things, because I see what people write on Facebook, and it is prolific, it is poetic, It is heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's angry.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's written with love and care and concern. And I honestly am so excited that the history books will be reflecting this perspective and of this gathering and the results of it, because I have to believe it's going to be positive.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yes. And
yes.
I believe that it is also, because I think that sense of hope that we have, the sense that we were all brought together at this time for this reason. Karen talked about feeling a calling to be there. Mm-hmm. I think every person that has been at the Sacred Stone Camp has been called there, mm-hmm, to be united with the people at Standing Rock. And I hope, I didn't mean to cut you off, Rania, I hope that you folks will share some of your work with our station so that we can help elevate those voices in the future. Would that be something you guys would be willing to do?
That sounds like a grand idea. We would love to. Thank you so much. We didn't even think about that when you asked it. See, we're all sitting here nodding our heads.
Do you see what happens when women get together and talk? And how about you, Karen? Tell us about, you know, there's so many amazing things that have come out of the Sacred Stone Camp. All of them, I believe, are for our edification and for our unification, and that I think they're all great. I really do. Even some of the bad things that have happened, the militarization of our law enforcement, and you know, when you look at the stark images of prayer and marches that are peaceful and completely unarmed, mm-hmm, and you see that juxtaposed to these giant, you know, it looks like a militarized vehicle with a turret on the top and a sharpshooter sitting there, and there's all of these riot police, fully clad riot police standing there. I think this is a defining moment that is allowing us to see something about our state, not just the state of North Dakota, a state of our humanity.
Yes.
That I think is a good thing for us to have to confront. I think it is good for us to have to look at the leadership of our state, the leadership in our law enforcement, and ask these questions at this particular time. So, all good things, I believe. Karen, what do you feel is one of the most overreaching impacts that the Sacred Stone Camp has had? And, of course, share anything else that you want our listeners to know about.
I think the camps and the people gathered there make a profound statement about the nature of human nature. And in the religious tradition that I'm a part of, there's a real sense that that humanity is capable of peace and of companionship and of solidarity and of respectful membership in the web of life. And the people at the camps show us and show me and give me a way to participate in an understanding of what it means to be human together that is rooted in generosity and purpose and place. And that reinvigorates my sense of being alive in Bismarck, in North Dakota, in on this continent and as part of this planet that I get to experience every time I'm there, which is often, being a part of an ecosystem in which I actually have a place to contribute as a human being. And so it's natural for me to be drawn there. And in some ways, that's almost become my context. And I'm in that context, or I'm away from it for a while. That is a reality that is ancient, that I think is in everybody's blood and bones,
mm-hmm.
that hasn't taken that much to remember how to do. And yeah, people are people, and we rub elbows and trip over each other, and it doesn't mean we all smile all day long.
No.
Conflict is part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who understand how to be people together in a way that affirms not just those people, but all of life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the demonstrations in Bismarck, certainly I've been an activist for a long time. I've been part of actions in Bismarck and other places, you know, of all kinds for mm-hmm. peace and social justice. And in Bismarck, the first demonstration of solidarity with Standing Rock was the first time I had ever seen police in riot gear on site for a demonstration. And I've been to and organized countless of those types of events. Not this one, but I attended this one.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw was a reaching out of peace toward those officers, and I saw officers join the dancing. At another demonstration, there were fewer police that time. I think it became understood that it was not likely that this was going to be a violent group. But the police who were there were in riot gear, and they were included in handshaking to honor those who had joined together. And there were hundreds of us, and most of us danced, and it took about half of the Capitol lawn to hold all of us. And so there's a sense that there's a place for you if you'd like it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a generous community that really is rooted in peace. I mean, that if this is based in love for the water and we're all made of water, you know, it's hard to make enemies out of others who are made of water.
That's right. It seems like such a simple and easily understandable idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that those who are listening take advantage of any opportunity that they have to go to the Sacred Stone Camp. As you have heard on this program with Rania Hoblett, Stephanie Dakota, and Karen Von Fossen, anyone who does go to Sacred Stone leaves a little piece of themselves there that wants them to go back. And thank you very much for being on today's program. Thank you for the work that you're doing through the Native American Training Institute. We hope that we'll have an opportunity in the future to hear more about that work and maybe share some of those stories through KPPPLP. If folks want to go to Sacred Stone Camp and can't, but would still like to help, you can donate directly to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Their information is available online, and you can also go to sacredstonecamp.org. So thank you very much, ladies, for being on today's program.
Thank you so much, and we would also encourage people to go to the big camp, Ocheti Shakowee, And we hope to see you there.
Yep. You will see me there this weekend if you're there. Thank you very much, ladies. The camp is asking for your support. To donate, go to the Red Warrior Camp, tinyurl.com/Red Warrior Legal, and follow them on Twitter at Red Warrior Camp. For more updates on the Sacred Stone Camp, news releases, and ways for you to support the camp or make donations, you can also visit sacredstonecamp.org. Please keep it tuned to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. To support our work here at the station, visit kppfm.com and go to the donate button. Thank you for tuning in to this special report from Standing Rock. Mini Wiccioni, water is life.